Accession number 27460, Reel 10.
The lodging and then. Wilkes, Reel 10. Are there any further memories of West Auckland?
Well, having said how much I thought about Tony Norse, we remained friends for many years. In fact, whilst I was in India, I was godfather to his child by proxy.
I forgot to mention, did you go on any manoeuvres or exercises whilst you were in West Auckland?
Not me, no. There were one or two small things, but we hadn't the vehicles to do it.
So essentially you were standing there and just picking up the equipment that had gone lost or
that's
required.
Right. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So then you moved to Whitney, I think you said, in the September of 1940.
Yes. So they'd already moved when I came back off the course.
Whereabouts were you lodging and living in Newton Aycliffe? In Newton Aycliffe.
In Whitley Weir.
Yes, in Whitley Weir.
Yes. I was in the church hall at the bottom of Cemetery Bank. It was a cold place. We had a water pump outside and an ablution shed built, corrugated sheets and a bit of canvas, and you could pump some water with a hand pump to get it. And of course, to get washed and cleaned up at night, the thing was to fill one of the wash basins, which was zinc, and put it on the fire and let it get properly hot, so quite a few of us got washed in the same water. I loved Whitney Weir. I got used to it. I had a workshop by now. I got a good toolkit. In fact, I had two, one that I could carry on the motorcycle and another one that was kept in the workshop, which was up in the towers. I think it had been an old coach house that I had. And I managed to make a decent workbench in there so that I could manage.
Where was the rest of the headquarters in the village?
The main headquarters office was in Station House, which is situated down Tlemy Bank. The main headquarters staff, the clerks and the like, they were in there along with the signal section. The quartermaster's stores was underneath the Methodist chapel next to the school. The dining hall was up Cemetery Bank. It had been a WI hut as we took over. And there were various billets. For instance, there was a hall beside the church, up a little track. Some of our men were in there. The other side of the road, there were some men in virtually a garret above a garage. They were in there. Different people. The officers were in civilian billets. The officers' mess was at Witten Castle.
So here you are, living in the middle of a whole lot of nostalgia.
Yes, I am, and I love it.
And the people of Whitney, how did they receive you?
Wonderful. There was an institute in Whitney Weir. Bear in mind, Whitney Weir had no amenities. We hadn't a cinema, we had nothing virtually. But the steward and stewardess of the institute, where we could go and have a game of snooker or billiards, the lady, she used to make tea, and we could go in and get cups of tea. And she used to bake some cakes, and we could buy little cakes from her. Of course, this was something, because your last meal at 5 o'clock, it was a long time till breakfast time. Now, Whitney Weir, we were virtually imprisoned there because the old bridge going south across the river was one of our boundaries. The level crossing going down towards Weir Valley Junction That was beside the station, and that was another boundary. The road going north up the A68, there was a place where there was a bus terminus, and that was the boundary up that road. And the cemetery was the boundary on the road from Witten to Howden Lea.
And you had to be, you were fixed in that boundary?
Yes, you had to remain in that boundary day and night unless you had a pass giving you permission to be elsewhere.
And presumably there were guards on those four points?
Oh, no, no, no. I think a lot was left to trust. We only had a guard at the towers, and we used to also have a policeman, a soldier, on guard at the top of Clemmy Bank. It was such a dangerous place that we used to have someone there to direct traffic.
You didn't get out very often, unless you say there was a pass. Were passes given just to go out for recreation and leisure for the evening, or were there more specific than that?
No, that was it. If you wanted to... for argument's sake, if, say... the battery at Howden Lea Weir were going to have a dance. Well, you could get a pass to go there. Or if you wanted to go to the cinema at Crook or Bishop Auckland, you could get passes to go there. Anything like that, you could get a pass for. I got involved with the local garage one day. I was walking down from the workshop, and I was approached by the owner of the garage, who was also in charge of the brickworks down the road. His son used to operate the filling station, but his son used to take epileptic fits, so I think he was very limited to what he could do. So Mr. Suggett approached me this day and asked if I would be prepared to do any work for them. And I thought, well, it's always good experience for me. Yes, yes. What did he want doing? So they wanted a clutch put into a little Morris 8. I said, right, I'd do it for him. He said, we'll pay you for it. I said, you won't. I said, no. I said, the army pays me for 24 hours a day. I said, I won't take any money off you. So I did the job for him, and he gave me a supper, which was very nice. And then a little bit later on, he asked me to do another job, and I was busy with that this night, and it was a very dirty job, and I was getting a lot of dirt off the vehicle working underneath the mudguard, and the son was standing with me ready to pass tools or anything that I needed, and it was just like a lock-up garage, but just a little bit bigger than an ordinary lock-up, with a pit under it. And there was a knock on the door, and this lady had arrived. And she was a farmer's daughter, and she'd brought their ration of butter and stuff, whatever. So Arthur Suggett, the son, he would take the stuff round to the house, and this lady would talk to me, and I thought, well, I'm such a sight. But anyway, she eventually went, and I tried to ask Arthur who she was, where she was from, but he wouldn't tell me. I learnt later he was fancying her for himself, but anyway, I was going on leave the next day, and that was the 9th of December. I was going on a 48 hours leave, so that was that. And then it got round into Christmas, and
this lady used to be your wife.
Eventually, yes. Christmas Day was the day I had my first half pint of beer and didn't like it. I didn't.
I should have asked you. Did the regiment have its padre and medical officer?
Oh, yes, we had, yes. Captain Healds was the medical officer, and the name just slips, Canon. He became a canon of it, actually, at Shildon. But he was a great padre.
And if anyone was hurt or was ill, no doubt they would report sick. They would
to the MO. As I did eventually, I was put into a sick bay that they had up Billy Row for a few days. Anyway, we got Christmas over, and one day the cook sergeant came to me whilst I was having my dinner on the Saturday and said he wanted a motorbike and sidecar to go somewhere that afternoon. So, right. He didn't tell me I'd need any tools or anything, and I just took the bike and sidecar, picked him up. And we arrived at this farm eventually, and who was there but the same young lady that I'd seen in the garage. And she recognised me straight away, and for all I was clean. And it turned out quite a few soldiers used to go to the house, and they used to be entertained to supper and a game of cards, etc., etc. One of the chaps told me later, he said, I didn't like to play cards there because this girl's mother used to sit with the cards in her hand. He said she had a mirror behind her, I could always see what was in her hand. Anyway, the cook sergeant, he'd never told me he was going to ask me to look at their car for them, but anyway, he did at this stage, and so it just went on from there. Got to know her. We eventually made our first date for the Tuesday, and then on the Monday, didn't things start to go wrong? I was told that I had to go with escort two lorries to second line workshops, which I didn't know where it was, but there would be a sergeant going with me who would be in charge. And I said, well, whereabouts is it? He says, I'll let you know when the time comes. So the worst, we had to tow two lorries that had come in a bad state of repair, and we weren't going to do anything with them, but they were completely dug in the mud in the tower's grounds. So we had to get a party of men to dig them out. But I was told I had to go over. We only had one tow rope in headquarters, and I was told to go across to Howdenley Weir and borrow their tow rope. That was two tow ropes. So we were supposed to set off at 8:30, but of course it was about 11 o'clock before we got these two lorries pulled out. And the roads were so bad, snow and ice, and we got to Witten Park and we couldn't get any further. So we turned round and we came back and up through High Grange and up to Crook, and then we had a bit of a struggle getting out of Crook, but we got out, and along to eventually we got along to Low Fell, and then the sergeant said to me, he said, you better go on ahead. I was riding a motorcycle. He said, you better go on ahead and see if you can find out where this place is. So I went along, and I was very lucky. I stopped just beside a side turning, and there was a fresh fish shop on the other side of the road. And I went in and asked them if they could tell me. He said, yes, you want to be straight down the side road down there. And he gave me a few directions and told me how to get there. So, of course, I was able to direct the lorries down there. Along the Team Valley trading estate, well, it was just a skating rink. The lorries could hardly travel. The ones that were towing, their wheels were spinning on the ice, trying to pull the other ones along. But we eventually got to the far end, and the sergeant said to me, he says, it's just about dark now. He says, I think you'd better set off. And so I wasn't to tell twice, and I got back. And fortunately, I was able to keep my date.
So you had some hair-raising experiences in the north of England with the winter and the...
Oh, yes. Now then, a lot of the men were put out on snow shovelling, and also, I think the guns had been pulled back from the coast, and the AEC Matadors were being used to pull council snow ploughs around the road, because they were the only vehicles, being four-wheel drive, that could do it.
So you played your part in keeping the roads open for the civilians?
Yes.
And of course farms must have been blocked off as well. Did you get involved in opening farms up?
No, not that I'm aware of. But one in the November, after we'd left West Auckland, the battery that was still in West Auckland, they'd got involved with a farm to go potato picking. And the farmer was very unkind to them. The men, they called for volunteers to go potato picking. Anything for a change. November, miserable day, mizzling on with rain. So the men worked. Of course, about 10 or 11 o'clock, there was tea brought out for the people that the farmer had employed, but not for the soldiers. The soldiers just had to stand and wait. At lunchtime, they went over beside the barn, and some of them went into the barn, and they were ordered out by the farmer. They had to stay out. The farmer refused to brew them tea. He said, "You're supposed to be self-sufficient," and words to that effect. And so they didn't get any tea with their sandwiches that they'd brought with them. So it didn't go down well. When they called for volunteers the next day, no one would go. Give the dog a bad name and it sticks, doesn't it?
Suppose, other than yourself, you got your young lady out of in the area, but other men were making liaisons, were they, with the local girls?
Oh, yes, there were certain ones. This chap that I was friendly with when I first joined the First Mediums, he got engaged to a young lady before we went abroad, but they didn't get married till we came back. But that was something that was a permanent thing. He was a nice chap, and opposite, different ones. There was one of our men, he'd worked for Roundtree's at York prior to being called up, and he married a girl from St. Helens. They're both dead now, but that was the sort of thing that did go on.
Did you have a regular Sunday parade, church parade?
Most Sundays, yes. And there again, our padre could fill the church. A lot of the civilian population were going to the church to the military service rather than to the civilian service, which was later.
We were expected to attend these services.
Yes. Well, it was mandatory for everyone. It wasn't mandatory with me, but I went sometimes because I liked the padre.
Did he get round the units?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes, he was wonderful. Corden, that was his name. Reverend Corden, Captain Corden.
Were the men who were having difficulties at home whilst they were away?
Possibly. I don't think we heard of much then, but we had quite a lot once we went abroad.
How long were you at Whitland-le-Wear?
From September 1940 till May the 25th, 1942.
Was it there quite a while?
Yes. There was quite a lot happened in that time. Incidentally, about a fortnight after I'd met this young lady who was to be my wife, I had a date this particular night, and there was a muster parade at about 4 o'clock. And this is January 1941, so you know it was getting dark. And being on a muster, I had to go on it. And being an NCO, I was put in charge of about 4 or 6 men. And the reason for this was there'd been an air raid over Carlisle, and an enemy plane had been shot down, and the crew had been seen to be bailing out. And it was suspected that they could have been down here they got bailed out of the plane. Well, of course, with the snow on the ground, we were told we had to go out and look for these parachutes. I was given a specific locality to search with these men, and we spread out, keeping our eyes glued. But there again, we didn't have flashlights or anything, and so we had to be very careful that we would cover all the ground. And we gave our best, but we didn't find anybody. Of course, next day we found out that they'd all been captured in and around the Carlisle area.
What other things were you doing in Whitney over this period of time?
We were starting to get vehicles. Now, one incident that I do think needs mentioning. We'd got this particular lorry. It looked a nice one when it arrived. Everyone wanted to drive it. It was an impressed lorry. It belonged to a wool firm and had the necessary attachments. And the quartermaster would have it for getting the rations and everything. And so the only problem was it was a devil to start. And once it was started, it had no power till it had been running quite a long time. So the driver on it was an efficient, regular soldier driver, and I'd checked everything. And so, of course, by he got in each day, it was running well. And I had another look at it, and I determined that it was the oil that was the problem. Oil drag. Now, you don't hear of those things nowadays, but I'd remembered an oil advert from pre-war days about this oil drag and what the cartoon they used to do about it. So I went and had a word with Captain Miss Skimmins, and I told him what I thought. So he said, well, tell the driver to call in and see us when he's finished his rounds tomorrow. Of course, the oil was quite fluid, but he agreed it was gooey. And so the oil was, permission was given to change the oil, and the vehicle had no further problems.
Another one of your improvements. Your,
yes. Yes.
So you got quite a wide range of faults which you would be getting and learning
yes.
all the time.
Mm-hmm. And we were getting more new vehicles, and there again the colonel was trying to keep them new. He wasn't using the impressed ones all the time, rather than let them use the proper army vehicles.
Which vehicles were these that you were getting, and the company? Who was making them?
Oh, Ford. Ford 1500 weight trucks. Those became signal trucks and that. We had some Humber staff cars, four-wheel drive staff cars. I think we had some Morris 500 weight wireless trucks again. And we got a 1500 weight Morris commercial office truck, which was fitted out as an office inside, two desks and seats and things like that, and it had awnings that came out each side.
Did you have any Bedfords? Were they coming in?
We got we got a few Bedfords as well as the Fords, and we got a Bedford water wagon that carried 200 gallons of water.
Were any of these of poor quality from the point of view of running and so forth?
No. When they came to us, we checked them over thoroughly and did everything that we were told to do on them and kept them right. And the Fords, just like the Bedfords, were coming with these Arctic-type chokes, so they always started in the bitter cold weather.
You were there for quite a while, and...
Yes.
Had you any thoughts that you might be going abroad at any point in time? Did you have any false alarms for that?
Well, we had become a training regiment. We were also on standby. The 6-inch howitzers were always on standby. We did get issued with some very old, 14 and 18 pounder guns. I didn't actually have anything to do with them. But they went out to the batteries to train the conscripts in artillery gunnery. We did, in the summer, go to Otterburn and Reedsdale. Now then, before we went there, we had our AECs taken off us, and we were issued with some American FWDs. They were petrol driven, and they weren't liked at all. They used a tremendous amount of petrol. They were just had a 5-speed gearbox. First gear was very low, and etc. We went up to Otterburn, and the best of them was doing 4 miles to the gallon, and the worst was doing just over 2. And I think that was a combination of how they were driven and how they were tuned up, but that's beside the point. I didn't have anything to do with them. So we went to, and we fired the 6-inch howitzers up there on training. They'd actually had the conscripts up and fired these older guns, and we'd been issued with some Chevrolet 4-wheel drive gun tractors to pull the old guns. Then we came back, and I think it would be about the August of 1941 when we had our 6-inch howitzers taken off us, and we were now to be issued with some new guns that I understand had only been fired in demonstration. They were the new 5.5-inch gun howitzer. So we took these guns over, and I suppose our gunners would be trained in gun drill for them. And then in the November, we had to go up to Reedsdale. We were put under canvas, and I can assure you, Reedsdale is inhospitable at most times, but November was bitter cold and horrible. We went up, and I think all the top brass that could be there would be there to see these guns fired under various conditions. Trouble was, there was such a mist over the place most of the time, but I know the guns were being fired. I don't think the top brass would be stopping under canvas. I think they'd be at the Percy Arms or something like that. But we shivered and didn't like it. So we came back from that. And then rumours began to spread round that we'd be shortlisted to go overseas. And then one morning, as I walked down into to the dining room, one of the signal men, he said, "We'll not be long before we'll be going abroad now." He said, "The hierarchy are pleased with the results of our trip to Reedsdale." So the next we knew was that the colonel, when he'd been told we would be going, he said, "Well, I don't want these FWDs. I want some AC Matadors back again." And he got them. But I'm digressing a little bit, because during the summer of 1941, I didn't feel I was making any progress. They were crying out for pilots in the RAF. And so I put an application in to transfer to the RAF, because I thought I had sufficient qualifications to join the RAF. So, of course, the battery clerk told me a few days later. He said, "You've had it." He said, "The colonel just tore up your application. It went in the waste paper basket." So I managed to borrow my fiancée's brother's car, and we got a pass to go away for the day, and we went down to Leaming Bar. Security, you couldn't believe it was as lax as it was. I produced my paybook to the sentry, said I wanted to see the commanding officer, and before you could say Jack Robinson, I was at his door. And when I went in, he said, "And how did you get here?" And I told him how I'd got in, who I'd seen, what I'd done. And I told him what I'd come about. And he listened to what I had to say. He said, "You appear to be the type of person we could do with." And he started showing me a few photographs of planes that had limped back home. And I agreed with him that it looked worthwhile. And so he said to me, he says, well, look, he said, the only thing I can do now is apply for you to be transferred. So he took various details down from me, and he said, I'll apply for you. And so the next I knew was when the clerk told me that the application had come through and the colonel had ripped it up.